Ugh, I thought I smelled something rotten in the podcast pantry. Hi, everybody. It's AJ here. And we just wanted to preface this by saying that this episode of Into the Falls is a discussion on the episode The Time Traveler's Pig, which guest stars a certain Justin Roiland. Now, we're fashionably late to a lot of things, but believe us, we knew about the charges brought against him the minute that it came out. So we collectively made the decision to not edit this podcast in any way, so please keep that in mind when deciding whether to listen to this episode or skip. And I just want to reiterate something brought down upon us from the legendary Pod God. Please remember that the issue at hand is not whether you like a show he made. This is about abuse, and should be taken seriously no matter what you thought of him and his work before this came to light. There are very real people being affected by this. Thanks for listening, y'all, and enjoy the show. Now, before we get into this, I just want to say, for the record, this episode made my brain hurt, so whatever you've got in store for me, I want you to take it a little easy on me this time, okay?
Well, so AJ, I'm sure you know this is a fairly popular show. I'm guessing you have a decent amount of friends who watch it.
You're referring to Gravity Falls, the show which our entire podcast is based around, right?
Yeah, so my first question is, why haven't you seen it?
Well, Wait, when am I?
You tell me.
I feel like we're slinking back into April when we started recording this podcast for the first time.
Oh, shit. Okay, hang on.
Am I at my desk right now instead of in my vocal booth?
No, I think I'm in the wrong thing. Let me... Okay, how many days is that?
Like 3 inches more.
Okay.
Now make it 6.
Okay.
Maybe 26 millimeters, a little more, back in.
I don't know how much a millimeter is.
Oh, there. Perfect.
Okay.
1, 2, 3.
To Into the Falls, a Gravity Falls podcast. I'm Mary, and I know lots of things.
I'm AJ, and I know nothing.
This is a podcast where I guide AJ through the wonderful weirdness of Gravity Falls, my favorite show that he has never seen.
If you're a new arrival like me, or looking to relive some crazy summer memories, come with us, and let's dive into the falls.
Hello, AJ. We didn't plan this super well because the way things are shaking out, we're about to have 3 episodes in a row with guests, which is a little gung-ho. But all the same, let's welcome our special guest for this episode, Waddles.
Aww, he's even cuter in person.
He is. Oh, he likes the camera. He's curious.
Aww. Hello, Waddles.
He has very tiny legs, but he says hello.
Hello.
I'll move my camera so I can see him enough. Oh, now you can't see
you
me.
You trained him well.
Yeah.
So they had to get in one time travel episode, I guess, didn't they?
Yep, and it had to guest star our favorite science grandpa, Justin Roiland. This is before Rick and Morty. This is maybe around the same time he was playing Lemon Grab on Adventure Time, but it's definitely before he was, like, super well-known in, like, the animation community.
Oh, wow. I'm gonna be honest. That kind of voice, I would not have pictured Justin Roiland. Or, I don't know.
Who do you think I'm talking about?
Who plays Rick on Rick and Morty?
Justin Roiland.
Okay.
Oh, well, yeah, because it's very different from his Morty voice, but it is the same guy.
That's pretty... He's got a lot of range.
Yep.
Hang on. I just got a text.
AJ got a text, so I'm waiting for him to rejoin the call. There he is. Oh. So this is kind of a big one, like, where it's always been supernatural sci-fi, but, like, this is the first time we've really introduced time travel into it.
Yeah, and stuff like that is usually you gotta kind of handle it delicately, because if you do really well, then your mind is blown, but if you do it really poorly, your mind is blown. but not in a good way.
I think with this episode, like, they didn't, it's not like Endgame where they like sat down and tried to figure out like what the logic was going to be. They're just kind of, it's just kind of basic time travel and they had fun with it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a cartoon. You can play a little looser with the rules in that respect.
Yeah, and it's a comedy.
Yeah, nobody's thinking really hard about this unless they want to, in which case we're just going to call them nerds.
Yeah, and they're mostly just playing the time travel stuff for laughs. It's not supposed to be like, whoa, time travel exists? Because, like, of course it does in this universe.
Yeah.
So they just, like, just have, like, Justin Roiland be this super anxious time travel agent who's terrible at his job. Pathetic bald man who just says time every other word. Speaking of every other word, at, like, every fifth note in my notes app right now says code. In all caps.
Gotta make sure you get it in there.
So I don't forget this time, because I always write it at the end, and that's what makes me forget. It's like, I do write it down, but I don't go through, like, I don't go through all my notes one by one. I just write down whatever I notice in the show, and then if it's relevant to the podcast, I'll bring it up.
Yeah, I also kind of noticed, maybe because it was a big old time travel thing, they kept it pretty close circle as far as settings go this time around. We only really travel outside of the carnival when they go back to the Oregon Trail.
And even then, they're not really leaving the carnival. They're leaving the day of the carnival.
Yeah. They've literally left the period of the carnival behind.
So the Oregon Trail scene, that lady... Okay, first of all... I have a lot to say about this scene. It's very funny. There's a guy just offering people dysentery in a canteen. Just, who wants dysentery?
Dysentery! Who wants dysentery?
Who wants dysentery?
The guy...
I want to say that's an ancestor of Stan's.
Duck voice, and that's not who... You were doing a Darkwing Duck voice right just now, don't deny it.
I mean, I wasn't thinking about it.
But you were. It came out naturally.
Who wants dysentery? That's
Let's
my Darkwing
get
voice.
Dysentery.
Let's get dysentery.
Let's die from dysentery. I can't do impressions, so I just do bad ones.
That's okay.
So there's a guy hawking dysentery.
Practice makes perfect.
There's a guy leading, just steering the wagon.
Alex Hirsch.
It's just straight up Alex Hirsch. Like, I'm not even going to make you guess. It's Alex Hirsch. Just very
obvious.
Yeah,
that was... that was,
and
like,
then who's inside
50%
the wagon,
Stan.
AJ? Describe the people inside the wagon.
So, poor old wagon family and their 10 kids. They got to make sure they've got enough kids to pull the plow and tend the tallow. What pioneer people did back then.
They rendered the tallow and they died of dysentery. Did you catch the mom's name?
No. Was it Bertha?
It's very important to the plot, AJ. No, her name is Fertilia, and the guy...
Oh.
The guy driving just, like, turns back and is like,
"By Trembly, Fertilia, it seems you've given birth to two more children."
"It appears I have. More little hands to render the tallow."
She just thinks she recently gave birth to two preteens without noticing.
Hey, maybe this couple is pumping them out. Just pumping them out.
But they're 12. They're 12, and she would have noticed if she...
Sometimes kids get lost in the shuffle.
Yeah, I mean, I guess they have other things. They're very distracted by the perils of the Oregon Trail.
Gotta worry about that dysentery. Gotta make sure they've got enough bacon rations for the trip ahead.
They've already had to eat like 5 of their kids. They're just tuned out now.
I'm just glad I'm not the only person on this podcast who gets to have Michael Scott moments.
That was not a Michael Scott moment. That is canon. Speaking of canon, AJ, when they're like running through the previous episodes, they run past the Mystery Shack in the snow, and who comes out and sees and doesn't see them, but who comes out and like notices that something happened?
Stan? Question mark.
What do you think it implies that he? It was a
this
very
was like,
brief encounter.
This was
but
like
what
40
you...
years ago, and he was just hiding out in the woods because he could, I suppose.
So, do you have any predictions for like anything we're going to find out about Stan's past, about what he does, who he is? Do you think it has anything to do with the vending machine? I'm not trying to lead you and tell you like this is definitely happening, and I'm trying to goad you on. I'm just trying to spur conversation about like what you make of these things.
Well, but I think I will just leave it up. Put my hands up, let go and let God, and just say it was just a one-time gag and we will never speak of it again unless...
Unless... It's important that they're going back to past episodes. It's not just recycling animation. That's a seed that was planted in those episodes. I don't know if you noticed. This is where
my brain started to hurt, because it was like, oh gosh, am I going to have to go back and see if I can find the calculator in that... in the fishing episode, or am I going to have to go back to Headhunters and look for a shoe?
This is where time travel
starts to give me a headache.
Yeah, you're not looking for the things they left. You're looking for something that's going to be more noticeable in the background of a scene like that than a shoe on the ground. So that is there. They did plan that far ahead. That's in the first three episodes. I think it's just the first three episodes. So it took a while to actually pay that off.
Yeah, and this is where I guess we're starting to see the innovation that Gravity Falls brings to modern TV animation.
Yeah, there were hints of it in the first couple episodes. Like, we had an ad for a child psychic a couple episodes before we met Gideon, and like, obviously they planted like something's going on with Stan and the vending machine, and like there's something mysterious about the journals, but this is like real solid
proof. Yeah, but like
for
the past few episodes we've had just like very centered plots. We've had some recurring characters like I think it's for the past three or four episodes now, we've had some kind of plot point with the rivalry going on between Mabel and Pacifica Northwest.
Yeah,
although I think it's slowly but surely starting to be relegated to only being played for laughs, because I mean, she got a chicken.
That's definitely the case with this one, because Pacifica, like, it doesn't really make sense that she would be trying to get a pig unless she like knew that it was gonna piss Mabel off, but I don't think she would, because like when they go back and Mabel doesn't go get Waddle, she stays to help Dipper first. Pacifica wins him instead, and it's like, she would not. I can't see her having any interest in keeping a pig as a pet or even bringing it home to like make pork out of it, because she would have like a butler or something do it. She would not do it herself. She would never think, she would never dream of that, and her parents would never allow it. It's just a background joke for this. It doesn't really make sense for her character if you think about it. I only just realized it when Charlie came on last time, only 2 days ago. We are marathoning these because there's an episode we want to get out in a timely manner. They were like, oh, but what about Pacifica being at the shack in the next episode? I thought they were making a joke about how they've accidentally almost spoiled things for you. And I was like, oh, I don't know if she does. She does. She's there. She's at the carnival. Because I guess just everybody is, because there's not a lot to do in town.
Yeah. So, I mean, why not set up this kitschy kind of carnival? It just seems like the perfect Sunday afternoon for Stan to make a quick buck.
Yeah, but it's a weird, like, it's a very cheap carnival. All the rides are, like, really dinky. The tunnel.
He literally says, I spared every expense.
Every expense. The Tunnel of Love is, like, really small, so I don't know how long that ride is or, like, where the tunnel goes. It looks like there's, like, more of it behind, but it's still like, that has to be very small, unless it just goes like really, really slow. But even then, like, that is a tiny building for a Tunnel of Love.
Well, it certainly was long enough for Wendy and Dipper to go around it thrice.
I think that supports my theory of it being really short, that they had time to do it three times.
Oh yeah, and what do corn dogs have to do with a Tunnel of Love? Somebody who was designing this really wanted it to be the Tunnel of Love and corn dogs. I just want to know the thought process behind that.
I think it's a copyright thing, like Stan isn't allowed to use the name for some reason. I don't think in real life that's copyrighted, but like when the free pizza guy is trying to play skee ball and Dipper's just laying on it, depressed, like if you look at the sign, it says like slant ball or something, so they're not calling it the real name.
This episode of Into the Falls brought to you by We Can't Mention That Brand Tangents. Gotta have that crunch.
That keeps coming up. I guess because it's a TV show and they can't use like licensed things. So Seuss is clearly Stan's most trusted employee because he rigs that dunk tank so hard, and Stan sounds very impressed. So I think that's why Seuss is always employee of the month.
Yeah,
he takes his job that seriously.
Quick fan theory. I think that quick exchange of dialogue with the laser cannon and stuff that he mentions, I'd like to think he encountered the time traveler previously, but it was probably only because the time traveler asked where the bathroom was.
Probably. He might have, like, clocked that, like, he had something. Although, Blendon doesn't have, like, a ray gun. He just has the tape measure. And the screwdriver that he stole, I guess.
He's probably not trusted with any sort of weapons.
Probably
very, very low on the food chain.
Because, like, the futuristic blaster thing doesn't come into play until the, I forget what they're actually called, but, like, the time cops come get him. They have those laser guns, and they shoot the dunk tank with it. I think Seuss just has an active imagination, or maybe he did encounter time travel, and he's just really casual about it, because he is about most things.
Or maybe Stan is right, and he just spends way too much time with the Mystery Twins.
Probably. I think he spends a lot of time with the Mystery Twins, and then he also has an active imagination, so they kind of spur each other on. So he kind of has
He
kind of has these concepts.
What else are you really going to do with the kind of busy work that Stan gives his employees? You gotta let your mind wander a little bit.
Yeah, and Seuss is basically a child. He's got kindred spirits in them.
He's the big lug that you can start up a game with and he'll just have his own fun.
He'll do it. He's amiable. I'm amiable, dude. Is the origin of Stan's famous catchphrase, when there's no cops around, anything's legal.
When there's no cops around, anything's legal.
Oh, really? I might have heard that, like, I don't know, just randomly scrolling on Tumblr one day and I never thought twice about it. How often exactly does he say it? I mean, obviously enough that you've called it a catchphrase.
He says it every 10 minutes for the rest of the series. Like 4 times an episode.
I can't wait to start the when there's no cops around drinking game.
We're not going to get very drunk if we're just watching one episode every record, but we can keep a tally on the show. Just how many times has he said it? So far, once.
Awesome. We're gonna keep a note of that.
Okay, something that's always kind of bugged me, and this is a nitpick. When the ball is coming at Wendy's face, she has plenty of time to duck. Like, maybe her reflexes are just, like, delayed, and she's, like, not registering that it's coming at her face, but, like, she had time to duck. She had time to notice that, clock it, and duck.
And who knows, she could have missed it entirely, or maybe it could have taken off her cap or something, and things would have turned out different, but nah. Time is actively conspiring against Dipper, because... Dude, you're too young. You've got bigger things to worry about. Like,
I would say that time has already worked out not in his favor because he was born when he was and he's so much younger than Wendy. Or not that much younger, but like at that age, it makes more of a difference.
Yeah, he's 12, not yet a teen, and she's like 15. But then she's also like...
She's 15, definitely a teen.
15, definitely a teen. And nobody knows a damn thing when they're 15.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know even less when you're 12. But like 15 is still very much a child. But I can also see how like from the perspective of a 12-year-old, she's like super grown up and cool and mature and experienced.
Yeah, I know when I was in first grade, I used to look up at the fifth graders like, wow, you're so big.
Oh my God. I used to look through yearbooks at my school and just think like every year the class below me looked 5 years younger and every year the class above me looked like 10 years older.
Oh my gosh. That is exactly the comparison.
It's probably just because kids grow so much.
That is very true. We're getting new shoe sizes every year.
Yeah.
Dipper needs to tie his shoes better. Otherwise, he's just going to leave them all over time. And
yeah,
then what?
There's probably one at the signing of the Declaration of Independence.
Really? I should check back that film I love, 1776, because if you affect one timeline, you affect them all.
I think they referenced the shoe in Hamilton.
Oh yeah, I can definitely remember it from the Ten Dual Commandments.
Yeah, it was in that song, yeah.
That guy tripped over the shoe and then that's how he got shot.
Yeah, that's the exact lyric actually. Lin-Manuel Miranda says, that guy tripped over a shoe and that's how he got shot. I don't do a good Lin-Manuel Miranda impression.
I mean, my best Lin-Manuel Miranda impression is Fenton Crackshell. And
that's closer than I'll ever get. And it's Fenton Crackshell Cabrera.
Yeah, I said that because I base my impression on the 80s Fenton Crackshell.
Okay, so not Lin-Manuel Miranda. But.
Yeah, but I mean the loose connection, and I guess it kind of sounds a little bit like Fenton Cabrera, so I mean, you can take it or you can leave it or you can nitpick. It just is.
AJ, something very important we have to point out. Let me look this up so I can make sure it's right.
Ooh, gotta get our facts straight here on Into the Falls.
There is an important connection you are missing. Let me make sure this is correct. I'm 99% sure it is. Yes, yes.
Well, open up my brain and grab like that funny looking rainbow colored wire and just solder it wherever you need to go.
Fenton Crackshell in the original DuckTales was voiced by an actor named Hamilton Camp.
I know that.
Hamilton.
It makes sense now.
It is kismet. They couldn't have gotten anyone other than Lin-Manuel Miranda to play him in the reboot.
It was fate. You know, I don't know why Dipper's trying to mess with time. Time knows what she damn well is doing.
Yeah, but Dipper is a 12-year-old idiot and he thinks he knows better.
Yeah, but when you're 12, it's charming. When you're 15, it's like, shut up and go do your homework.
The 15-year-old isn't doing it.
Yeah, but I had this thought in my brain, like, ever since we were doing it, and I just had to get it out.
Doing what?
Back when we were discussing how the age difference between Dipper and Wendy.
Yeah, but, like, Dipper thinking he can go against time, like you said, when you're 12, it's charming. He is 12, therefore it's charming. You have nothing to complain about, because there was no 15-year-old trying to do this. Wendy had no idea it was happening.
I tried to make a connection back, and it just...
I tried to do that when I was 15, so I know.
Yeah, I actively tried to conspire against time when I was 15. And you know what? I succeeded. I was able to pop one zit on my face, and I was able to go to school feeling confident.
There's not enough hours in the day for me to draw my fursona.
You know, there's not enough hours in the day to do anything.
I know I said I don't do good impressions, but I think I really did a great impression of 15-year-old AJ just now. I think that's exactly what you sounded like.
Yeah, pretty much.
Hey, kids. Have you ever wanted to travel through time like Marty McFly?
Who?
I meant Dipper.
Yeah!
New from Time Company Time Toys, it's the Time Tape Measure!
Whoa!
Pull the tape to choose when to go, and press the button to warp through time.
It's literally just a tape measure with a little speaker in it!
Time Tape Measure works just like a real tape measure, except we painted over the inches and centimeters so it can't actually tell you the length of anything!
It's functionally useless!
Time Tape Measure may be a toy, but your imagination can take you anywhere! Any when?
I can go to the non-woke past my dad's always talking about!
Just keep it away from pets, parents, and little sisters!
I want to time travel!
I think I'll go back to when I was an only child!
I don't think that was necessary.
Get out of my room!
Time Tape Measure has no actual time or measuring capabilities. Seriously, keep it away from pets. Please don't put it in your mouth. We use really cheap paint and I don't know what's in it.
See you last week!
Okay, when Robbie like holds the snow cone up to Wendy's eye to like make the swelling go down, and I get it, but also the syrup is right in her hair. It's gonna be so sticky.
Right in her eye. So that would make it worse.
It's gonna get in your eye. It's gonna sting like hell. Your face is gonna be sticky and your hair is gonna be sticky. You're just gonna have a bad day.
Wendy should recognize that Robbie is a jerk. You know what? Dipper is justified.
Yeah, but like, he's more pathetic than like a bad person. He's just kind of a dumb kid. Not in the same way Dipper is, but in like a more obnoxious way. But like, he is still a kid.
We're jumping around the episode a little bit, but...
We're jumping around the episode a lot of it.
Just like they did around time.
Yeah, you can't blame us. We are on theme.
We are subject to the whims of the episode. But seriously, in the final ball toss when he's like, and forever know that tight pants are overrated, Dipper must have known each and every time that Robbie's pants would have suffered that fate. Otherwise, he probably would not have said that.
No,
just something to think
he
about.
He couldn't have known that Robbie was going to get the water spilled on him, but Robbie was wearing skinny jeans. That was the whole joke, is he was already wearing tight pants and the water just made them too tight. But okay, what I was about to say is, why was there a bucket of hot water just sitting there, and how recently was it heated? Because the carnival went all day. I'm guessing it opened like sometime in the morning, that the dunk tank opened at noon, and there's just a thing of hot water.
I think you mean the indiscriminate species tank.
Species?
Yes.
Indiscriminate species tank instead of dunk tank?
Instead of duck tank.
I said dunk.
but at first you said duck.
No, I didn't.
You said duck at first.
I was having trouble. having trouble enunciating. And I wanted
to make a joke of it. I wanted to make light of it.
I thought you were making a joke about the copyright thing and like that was your replacement. I'm like, that has nothing to do with anything. What?
No, I'm making a call back to the reason why Dipper wanted to go through all this trouble in the first place. It's because Wendy wanted an indiscriminate species plushie.
She wanted the panduck.
She wanted the platypus.
No, it was a panduck.
Okay, well, that's the end of that tangent.
I like that when they meet Blendon for the first time. There's so many good lines in this episode. He won't let them use the tape measure, so they both just like silently and instantaneously decide to trick him out of it. Like, they don't even like give each other a look. They just both decide, like, we're gonna con this guy, basically.
It's telepathy. So they're like,
you seem tired. You should take one of the rides at the mystery fair. Like, they just know that this is gonna work and they know what the other one is gonna do.
It's exactly the same as choosing violence, except when Dipper and Mabel do it, it's choosing chaos.
Yeah, they chose chaos. I think Mabel will always...
And it's charming.
I think they're doing it for different reasons. I think Mabel will choose chaos because, like, she wants to go wreak havoc. And Dipper is doing it because he thinks he can do it well. Like, he thinks he can restrain himself enough that it won't have consequences. But Mabel just doesn't care.
That's the difference between them. Dipper thinks he can control chaos, whereas Mabel knows that you just gotta let chaos happen.
So she went back, introduced people to calculators and high fives and women's suffrage.
Giving them a taste of the good times ahead.
Yeah.
And I mean, those poor Oregon trailers, frankly, they need all the reassurance and uplifting words they can get.
Guys, get this. In like 100-something years, they're gonna make an educational computer game about you guys.
Oh, that'll blow their minds. They'll be like, what's education?
Not about you specifically, but about like this general period in time and people like you. It's good enough. AJ, I don't know if you remember the last episode we did with the Mystery Shack Lookback gang. Charlie told you that something in the document about Nathaniel Northwest was going to be an actual plot line in the show, and that paid off in this episode. Do you remember what?
I don't. I'm about to go back into the document and look it up. Do I have permission?
Yeah, I was about to get the document and drop it in the chat.
Let's see. I'm going to eat this entire oak tree because I'm a powerful wizard. Attempting to live out his beautiful dream. Thomas Jefferson, two kids in an overcoat. The current and forever president is Santa Claus. Statues in Mount Rushmore are giant presidential-faced robots. Oh my god, it's the time-devouring baby!
It's the time baby! It's a boy!
You know what? I actually remember. I guessed it would be the Mount Rushmore robots, but...
Yeah, and we let you believe it.
I suppose it had to be the baby.
It had to be. It really could have been any of those, I think. If you don't know and you just read that out of context, you're like, yeah, it could be anything at this point.
Yeah. The writers are just having fun. This is pure... They're not thinking about this. This is purely made for a one-time gag. But then it's not. And then what?
And then we wonder why that baby on the Oregon Trail had a Band-Aid on his chin, because those definitely hadn't been invented. Like, we had bandages, like cloth bandages, but like, that's clearly, if you look at it, it's clearly like a Band-Aid with the thing in the middle and the two sticky parts. So like, it's not Mabel's fault that there are anomalies there.
Mabel had it in her pocket and she saw the baby and had a moment of sympathy.
Just did that very quickly off screen.
Yep.
Just, oh, he has a little boo-boo on his chin.
He has a boo-boo.
Here you go.
I bet she even had the disinfecting cream on hand, too.
Yeah, she probably had Bactine in there. And
she knows about the dysentery.
Why are you spraying my baby with poison? That's probably not how anyone talked on the Oregon Trail. That's a
fucking
southern
accent. Why are you spraying my baby with poison?
That's a southern accent. You know what? They migrated there from Georgia. Sure.
Of course they did.
Dipper is like, he's very selfish in this episode, not to the point where you don't like him, because like when Mabel says she lost Waddles, like he is sympathetic, and then like he does kind of have a good reason to think that this isn't that big a deal, because he's like, oh, well, I've known you my whole life and I know that this is just one of those things where you get obsessed for a day and then you're over it. And he's wrong, but like, you can understand why he would think that. But also he's saying like, do you really want Wendy to date Robbie? And she's like, I don't know. I'm like, she has no personal stake in this. Why would she have an opinion about that? I mean, I guess
the only personal stake she has is that it's something to do with her brother, but that's his business. Yeah, all she wants to do is cuddle Waddles.
It's her brother, and I guess Robbie was, like, kind of rude to both of them, but, like, she doesn't, I don't think she feels that strongly about it.
She doesn't care. I don't think she hates Robbie like Dipper hates Robbie.
Yeah, I mean, they both dislike him, I think, but, like, she has no reason to really care that much if he goes out with Wendy.
Yeah, she's not the one with the child crush.
Yeah, so Dipper's being selfish, but he learns his lesson. He sees Mabel being depressed a month later, having been turned into an attraction by Stan. When life gives you lemons, you make money off of your emotionally devastated niece.
Yeah, and that's what turns Dipper around. It's not the fact that she lost the pig that she's loved and cuddled this whole time. It's the fact that Stan is exploiting her as a mystery shack attraction. That's where he draws the line.
Well, that's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying the two things both happened.
I guess what a good brother for him to recognize that and be like, nope, now I can't let this happen.
So Alex Hirsch in the episode commentary, and this isn't a spoiler for me to say this, he said it technically doesn't really make sense for Mabel to just stand there banging her head for a full month. So he imagines that, like, one day a week she'll, like, walk out, or once a day she'll, like, walk out in remembrance of Waddles and just do that for a while and then go inside and eat a sandwich. My personal headcanon is that, like, someone from the shack brought out food for her and, like, stuff she would need. A, because you have to keep her there as the attraction, and B, because they just feel bad for her.
Yeah, and I feel like Mabel would remember the day and the exact minute that everything changed. Heck, both do. You see the camera zoom in and they're like,
everything is different now.
Yeah, so she would remember, and she would definitely make it a note on her calendar. Oh, it's time to go out and mourn.
Robbie's got Axe body spray too. Because Mabel's like, do you smell a gallon of body spray? And he walks in. He and Dipper are not so different. They're both awkward and sweaty. They're both just dumb kids.
They both think the solution to body odor is really, really strong body spray and not a shower. We want to give them time to live out this phase and come around to the right way. But then it's like, wake up, guys.
I mean, he learns enough of the lesson that he kind of thinks that if he makes this day perfect with Wendy, that he's, like, gonna get to date her, or he's gonna win her, and, like, it's just not how things work. It's not how relationships work. And, like, I think on some level he kind of knows, like, that he's too young for her, but he's trying anyway. He's trying at least to impress
her. He's different. He's gotta try his best.
Like, it's kind of irrational to think that she might go out with a 12-year-old, but he's working on, like, his own logic.
And Robbie is clearly illogical.
Yeah, but, you know, teenagers.
Yeah, look at him with his baggy gray hoodie and his tight pants.
That's a black hoodie. Are you colorblind like my dad?
I thought it was, it looked dark gray.
My dad, I got him a big Godzilla plush for Father's Day, and our cat always likes to sit with him on his recliner, and he, like, wasn't doing it one night. There was just, like, no gray cat next to him, and so I handed him the Godzilla plush. I was like, you need a little gray creature with you. He's like, this is gray? I thought it was green. I'm like, no.
Well, I mean, Godzilla does have some green in some incarnations.
No, I understand.
Or at least from the art I've seen.
I understand the logic, but, like, if you saw the plush, it's pretty clearly, like, dark gray or black.
I mean, especially if it was a plush based on, like, the new American Godzilla.
Yeah, I'm gonna drop a picture of it, of how I presented it to my dad on Father's Day.
Oh yeah, that is gray. Like, maybe it's like a green casted gray.
Yeah, I can see that.
I'm glad you put the Green Bay Packers hat on him, because that green and that green are not the same.
AJ did air quotes when he said green for the second time. He is not, I don't think he's colorblind, but the podcast listeners couldn't see you do that. God,
I'm just gonna dub in air quotes, like, after the fact.
I know.
It'll be this weird jump.
I know this is kind of unrelated to what we were just talking about, whatever it was, but I can't get it out of my head, the line where Seuss tells Blendon he has to take it off his tool belt because one of them might fly off and accidentally fix something.
That is pretty funny. Like,
in an episode full of very, very funny moments, that is one of the funniest, if not the funniest. And just Seuss's delivery, he's just always just so deadpan. I love him.
He's so chummy and just kind of, you know, spacey. You don't really expect him to have a twinge of sarcasm, but there
it
is.
He does. No, that wasn't sarcastic. He is completely genuine about this. That is who he is. I would think you would know that by now.
I'll make it my personal headcanon that he's just like that little bit.
You think he's smarter than he lets on?
He's self-aware that everybody sees him as kind of like a little bit of a dope, so he likes to, it's like Launchpad. He's definitely smarter than he looks, but he likes to,
I
you know.
never thought that about in the original launchpad. Yes, the Darkwing Duck launchpad, at least. Reboot launchpad, I never got that. I basically saw him as, and I mean this in the nicest way, basically a Seuss clone. Not like the exact same character, but basically that show's equivalent.
Yeah, reboot launchpad. Yeah,
they're really getting Stan out of the way for these episodes, because like they'll have him get distracted by period piece on TV because he can't find the remote, or what else have they done? Yeah. Like, obviously in this one, he's in the dunk tank.
There to dance, like, briefly and to give Mabel emotional support.
And then he gets distracted by money, by counting his money.
And then here, he's just the dunk tank fodder because he knows he's never going to get dunked.
And that's what I'm trying to think. In the first episode, he's giving a tour of the shack while all that is going on. Second episode, they abandon him to go catch the sea monsters, so he didn't really have a say. The third episode,
it's his wax figure.
Well, the third episode, he's in mourning, so he's not in the mindset to do that. Fourth episode, he goes over to confront Bud Gleeful, and then they start talking business. Fifth episode, period piece. Sixth episode, what was the sixth episode? Was it Little? No, was it Dipper versus Manliness? It was Dipper versus Manliness, right? So that's when he's trying to win over Lazy Susan, so he's getting a makeover. So he's out of the way for the supernatural stuff. One after that, he's counting his money, and now we're here. Wait, what was it last time? Irrational Treasure. Yeah, so he was in the stocks that whole time, so they always have a way to get him away from whatever the main plot is.
They gave him his one big mystery moment in the first episode with the vending machine, and then it's like, okay, now he's a funny ha-ha comic relief character from here on out.
Yeah, because, like, it's the only way the audience can believe that he still doesn't believe in supernatural stuff, because, like, it happens so much, and a lot of the time it happens, like, out in the open. Like, the Manitars were just out during the day, and so we're just like, well, how does he not... he just doesn't see any of it. He's just over there the whole time.
He's just over there, counting his money, into the vending machine every now and again. Another weird tangent, but like, I have not noticed a swear that many times these past few recordings.
We need to start a tangent count.
You know what we do?
Not even the number of times we go on tangents, just the number of times we say tangent and just acknowledge that we went on a tangent.
Put it in the description. Expect tangents and expect the word tangent. Just the description of the podcast.
I love how like we talk about it so much that when we had Charlie and Ella on last time, I don't know if this is going to make it into the episode, but like at the end, I think it was after we stopped recording maybe, but Ella was like, did we go off topic enough? Did we have enough off topic tangents? I'm like, yeah, I think so. And she's like, okay, good. I want your audience to get more of what they're used to. I'm like, thank you. Not even in like, she's trying to drop a sick burn. She's just, we just talk about it so much that she's like, okay, so this is like an integral element of your podcast. So we have to do it.
This is us.
This is us. That's my favorite show on NBC. Just kidding. I've never seen it. I know Mandy Moore is on it. And who else? Sterling K. Brown. I almost said Sterling Knight. That's fucking Chad Dylan Cooper from Sunny with a Chance. And I don't know who
else. It took me a little bit to get there. I saw, funny thing, I first got Disney Plus and I saw a little bit of Sunny with a Chance and a little bit of So Random.
It's a party, get down.
So Random.
It's a party, AJ. Get down. Thank you. Like looking down at my notes and like noticing that I wrote down a line that I thought was really funny and then just remembering it and laughing. So I wrote their leader, Waddles. Because when Blendon is being taken away, he's like, it was those kids and their leader, Waddles. He just assumes that Waddles is the mastermind behind all of this for no discernible reason.
It was those kids and their leader, Waddles.
That's this show's equivalent of I would have gotten away with it if it weren't for those meddling kids.
I haven't seen this episode in so long that I half expected him to just quote that line, but no, it's just their leader, Waddles.
Nah, they're one actual pop culture reference and they had to save it for Babe. And you know what? Respect.
That'll do, pig. That'll do.
It's funny because I haven't seen Babe.
Neither have I. I was going to say I probably should. I think it's on like HBO Max or something.
When I have my George Miller marathon, I'll pop in on Babe.
I saw like some reference to like Alex Hirsch quoting this when kids aren't going to get it. I think Charlie like sent me a snippet of their episode on it and they talked about that. But I don't know. When I saw the episode, I got the reference and I still haven't seen the movie. I just had seen it referenced in other places. So I was aware of what it was. But yeah, I don't know if like a 9-year-old watched watching at the time would know if they haven't seen Babe. Because, like, I mean, I know it's an oldish movie, even at the time.
Mid-90s? Yeah,
1995. So, like, even at the time, it's a little, like, it's before kids' time. But, like, you know, we have home media. It's not like kids can't see it. Like, they might prefer newer stuff that they, like, saw in theaters. And so they already kind of grabbed onto it. But, like, I wouldn't
I caught Space Jam randomly on HBO one time when I was a kid, so...
Yeah, it's like when I was a kid and I watched like Hannah Montana and somebody references like the Beatles and Lily's like, who? And I'm like, no, the biggest one was in Read It and Weep because it makes absolutely no sense to this day. It does not hold up to scrutiny. There's like a bunch of famous people there and her mom's like, I know that guy. I had all of his albums. And she's like, what's an album? I'm watching this one. I'm like 8 years old. I'm like, they're still called albums. This podcast is brought to you by Disney Channel Tangents. We do have a podcast about a Disney Channel show, but we will talk about every piece of Disney Channel media except for that show, Disney Channel Tangents, where dreams come true. Shake It Up is next. I hated that show when I was a kid, but I watched it anyway. But I guess in the back of my mind, I was like, that girl's going to be Michi someday.
You foretold the future. That tape actually works.
Yeah, that's how I did it. I had this... measuring tape.
Do you need to charge the battery for that or something, or does it just work?
It just works, because in the future you don't need batteries. Everything just works.
I'll have to figure out how they do that. What's the cipher called?
I think we're still on Atbash. Once decoded, it reads, not H.G. Wells approved.
Yeah, clearly not. But then, you know, everybody's got their own back-ass version of time travel. It's like, do you even really want the methods to intersect? It's just going to make people's brain hurts more. We've exhausted every timeline. We've sewn up every thread. What's next?
What is next? The next one, which will once again include friend of the show, Charlie Marlowe, not Ella this time, but she's coming back soon, is Fight Fighters.
I'm full-heartedly expecting to see like 10,000 Street Fighter references and or Mortal Kombat references. If this show doesn't revolve around the local Gravity Falls arcade, I will be sorely disappointed.
Well, AJ, you'll just have to wait to find out next time on Into the Falls.
Keep those quarters handy, kids, and remember, trust no one.
Time trusts no time one time.
After time.
This has been Into the Falls. You can find me at Mabel Page Pines on Twitter and Instagram. That's Mabel, P-A-G-E Pines. I'm also May Page on YouTube and Film Knife on Medium and WordPress. That's where I post my film reviews and essays, editorials, etc. You can follow the show on Twitter at The Falls Cast, all one word, and Into the Falls Podcast on YouTube. And I will hand it off to AJ.
Well, you'll be happy to know I've made it a little easier nowadays to find me on socials. So if you want, hit me up on Twitter, Instagram, or Tumblr at UncaAJ. That's UncaAJ. This podcast is hosted and produced by Mary McKeon and AJ Sanchez, and our theme song and some of the music is by Kevin MacLeod. Thanks so much for listening, and until next time, trust no one! Just for the heck of it, you want to clap?
Yeah, sure. Three, all right. Two, one. We're supposed to clap at the same time, AJ. You always do it like one full second later.
You know what? How about I clap on one, you clap on clap, and let's see if they sync up on your end.
Okay.
It's an experiment.
Okay. Do you want to count it down? Am I counting it down?
You count it down.
Okay. Three, two, one, clap. Hey!
It worked! I cannot believe it.
We did a sync clap, everybody.
Actually, I can't believe it because I came up with it.
All right.
Yeah, that's going to be the outro funny bit.
Yeah.
All right.